It's go time. Now, I don't know if you've heard that phrase before in sports or in the military or in a movie. Perhaps you've heard that phrase before standing in line at the grocery store. Maybe you've heard that phrase before at your dentist's. Maybe by your surgeon. It's go time. I don't know. Perhaps you've been sitting ready to turn left. No one coming, green light, and you say, it's go time, it's go time, it's go time. And when we think about it's go time, that phrase, it's go time, typically when it's heard or used in other places, it means putting your beliefs, your words into action. It means having integrity. It means doing something with what you believe. That's what it's go time means. And this putting your money where your mouth is, putting rubber to the road. This dynamic we face in church, so this month we're saying it's go time. Lisa raised the question we typically use May. Well, I reflect on the fact that Jesus Christ died, he paid the price for our salvation on the cross. We celebrate that in April. My sentiment is, well, it's time for me to go and do something for that great gift he's given me in the month of May. So it's go time. And it being go time this month, I wanted to us to look at various dynamics of that, and as Lisa said, there'll be various people contribute to that for us to understand how we go, how we do what's in our head. Some of our students are graduating, and it's go time for them. It's go time for Evan. It's go time for, well, Lisa, you're going back to school, right? Go time back to school. Who else? It's go time for Parajita, who's now a nurse. It's go time for Jonathan. It's go time. Putting what you believed, all that stuff in your head, into action. That's what we do in the church as well. So this morning, I thought we would first take a look at Exodus. I'm sorry it's wrong in the bulletin, but Exodus 3. Exodus 3, and we're going to look at a person who was born a Hebrew slave, who was an Egyptian prince as he was raised, who committed a capital offense and killed someone and fled to the desert. In fact, he fled to this desert. If I could have the lights, please, dimmed. He fled to this desert and married a nomadic shepherdess whose name was Zipporah. He married a nomadic shepherdess and he started his life as a shepherd. All throughout this month, I thought it would be interesting if we, as we looked at this, had a dramatic reading of the dialogue we're going to have. So this morning I've asked three people to come and share with us a reading of what we're going to look at in Exodus 3. So Bruce and Bethany and Craig, if you'll come up and share with us, and you can contribute as well too, you'll be able to read along and as the text finds itself on the screen.
Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up.
I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up.
When the Lord saw that he'd gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush.
Moses! Moses!
Here I am.
Do not come any closer. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.
At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God.
I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt.
Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?
I will be with you.
Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what's his name? Then what shall I tell them?
I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you.
What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you?
What is that in your hand?
Staff? pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue.
Who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say.
Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else.
What about your brother Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do.
Thank you.
Well, this is God's word. Any questions? Any comments? Any perspectives you'd like to share on what you've just heard? God changed his mind so that he allowed Aaron to speak alongside of Moses. Great question. What does it mean the Lord's anger burned against Moses? Right. Barbara brings up what Jesus says later to his disciples about the fact that God gives you what to say. So let me ask you some questions. First of all, what was Moses doing when God came and called him? What was he doing? He was looking after the sheep. He was a slave on the run. He was an Egyptian prince in hiding, and he was looking after sheep. Well, let me ask you another question. Who was going to go and rescue the people of Israel from their slave drivers? Moses? God? God said, I am concerned about their suffering, so I have come down to rescue them. So what did he ask Moses to do? It's right there. Sorry, go and speak. Go, speak on his behalf. I'm going to rescue them. You go tell them. And tell me, what was Moses' response? Send someone else. Let's look at the five responses he has. The first response that he gives is, I'm not significant. I'm not important. And what does God say? You got me. I'm going with you. What's the second excuse? Who are you? Are you significant? Are you important? He says, suppose go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me. And they ask, who is this guy? Are you significant? Are you important? What is God's answer? First two words. I am. The next thing, what does Moses then say thirdly? What if they don't believe me? What if I fail? And God, in effect, says, they won't and you will. They won't believe you and you'll fail. But he then asks what question? What's in your hand? What have you got, Moses? Moses responds back with a simple stick that guided sheep. Think of that, the imagery. Moses held on to a stick, and God says, you've got all you need. He took that stick and he changed it into a snake in front of Moses and said, in my power, I will show great miracles, and I'll lead the people out. So, what was Moses' fourth issue? Speech. I can't speak very well, Lord. I'm not very eloquent. Guess what the angel beside God is saying? You're doing pretty well right now arguing with God. I wouldn't say that you're not eloquent. Most people bow down and cower by God. You're arguing with him. I would say you got it. What is God's response? I'm going to teach you. Who made you? Who made you? Who saved you out of the Nile, Moses? I can do this. And what is his fifth concern? I don't want to do this. Please, I don't have any other excuses. I just don't want to. Tell me, in your life, have you used any of these five excuses? I have. One person said all the time. All of them. Sorry, not all the time. Sorry. I use them all the time. I'm not worthy, God. Why are you calling me? You're not worthy. Who are you? I'm not eloquent. I can't really speak all that well. I can't do what you're telling me to do because you saved me, empowered me to do it. I can't really do it. And they're going to doubt it. And I'm going to fail. And what's the last one? The classic one. I like this one. I don't want to. Not me. I don't want to. I'm not worthy. All of us have used these excuses before. Now, let's just think for a little bit. God is, as Mary said, gracious enough that he lets us have power. I don't know how all that works out, but he gives us free will. And sometimes we say, no. No, Lord. And guess what he says? Okay. Love you anyways. In this case, and I believe in the cases of most importance in terms of you and what God wants you to do, guess what God says here in the end? What is the response? He's going to help him, he's going to teach him, and he's not letting him off the hook. I didn't really ask you to go, Moses. I told you to go. So, I'm already sending you your brother, because guess what, Moses? I knew you'd say this. That's why I'm sending your brother, because he'll help you go. He's already on his way. Do you see him? I have a plan. I'm backing it up. I've called you to go, and there's the person that's going to go with you. And I'll, as Mary said, I will equip both of you. He is already on his way to meet you, and he'll be glad to see you. I will speak to him and put words in his mouth. I will help both of you speak, and will teach you what to do. I'm not asking you, Moses. Everything is led in your life to this point. And you got to go. Well, Moses went. And the rest is history. Just imagine for a moment all that came about because Moses went. A people were saved. A law was written. A moral code was developed that impacted millions, billions of people. Exists within our moral code of Canada. We read it today. Jesus Christ was born in the line of Moses. Moses was at that critical point, dirty with sheep in the desert, looking at this miraculous sight. And at that crucial moment, God was saying, I really want you to go. Oh, I have these five reasons. I really want you to go, and I want you to say yes. Because I don't want to physically pick you up and move you to Pharaoh's palace, but I'll do that. Because I know within you, I know who I've made you to be. I know the message I have for you, and I will save people because of it. Moses went, and the rest is history. Post-slavery, post-Exodus, post-conquest of Israel, this Hebrew Egyptian prince or slave prince became Israel's first high priest, their lawgiver, their statesman, their rescuer, their prophet, their constitution writer. And this is what it says as his eulogy. This is in Deuteronomy 34:7. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were not weak or his strength gone. Nope, I wouldn't want to arm wrestle him at 120 years old. No prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, who the Lord knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to the whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. Moses did not regret that day when he was called. He probably laughed at it. I was so close. Didn't want to go. Didn't think I could speak. I didn't think that they'd listen to me. Didn't know that God was who he was. And didn't think I was significant. I'm so glad God actually made me go. Most important figure. Most important prophet. God's calling you. How do I know that? Because you're hearing this morning. It's not a chance that you came here this morning. You may say, oh yeah, but I chose to get up and come here. Yeah, but you're listening to me now. God's calling you. God's calling you into all kinds of incredible and interesting things. Question is, will you go? Will you follow his plan? The mission value, mission vision step one is to live out God's plan for you. As Lisa said, in all the different ways that is, holding a door for someone, having a glass of water for someone, helping a neighbor, stopping to talk to people. It's so wide in terms of what you can do for God. He's calling you to yield. Question is, will you do it? Or, in other words, what will your eulogy be? I'd like mine to be like Moses. Clear vision. Strength like like a teenager. God provided that for him. But in the middle of that eulogy, it says this: whom the Lord knew face to face.